Welcome to The Quantum Pod, a podcast by Zapata. In this episode, I got to pick Jen Houston's brain about the opportunities and challenges in marketing quantum computing to enterprise customers. Okay, today I have with me Jen Houston, who is the Chief Marketing Officer over at D-Wave, and we're here to talk about everything that she's learned, talking with real customers, what D-Wave's learned over their history in quantum computing. So yeah, Jen, thanks for coming on the Quantum Pod.
Thanks, Ethan. So happy to be here. What a great day. I always love to talk about quantum. So where would you like to dig in?
Well, we always start with, this is your pod. So let's set the stage. What's in the pod with you? This can be like music, food, equipment. Like what's the surroundings like?
What's surrounding me? Well, this is going to be a little bit weird, but surrounding me is my little stuffed real pink mouse. Her name is Delia, and she has a book. And she is, as I mentioned, pink, and she's from England, and my sister sent her to me. And the reason why Delia is sitting there with me is because she represents this sort of insatiable love of learning and reading that I think you have to be in this space. And so Delia sits with me, and if we were on video, I'd show you to her. But just imagine this cute little pink mouse with a book in her hands.
I love that. That's great. So we've got some rapid fire questions to get this started.
Sounds good.
First one is, what do you personally find most interesting about quantum computing?
The people, the brilliance, the ideas. Just there are people who are the only person in the world that does that thing. Graphical topological theorists, software designers who are focused only on how do you use Python to make those qubits work together. It's the array of human beings that we get to interact with in the quantum space is just amazing.
Yeah, incredible. I definitely agree. We've got incredible people here at Zapata too, and yep. Love working with all of them. Next one is, what do you think is the most revolutionary aspect of quantum computing?
Revolutionary. Well, I mean, I'm going to be a little bit provocative. I actually think that the most revolutionary aspect of quantum computing is the hybrid piece of it. I think the fact that we can take incredible classical resources and pair them with incredible quantum resources and unlock things that we could not even imagine could be unlocked, that's revolutionary. And I envision a world in a space where, you know, through the cloud, you put that problem on, certain parts of the problem go to different parts. You could even go to different quantum computers. You could have some parts go to CPUs, GPUs, gate model systems, annealing systems, and that's the magic. So I think that's actually quite revolutionary.
Yeah, definitely. Last one is, what is the most unique aspect of working at a quantum computing company versus other companies you've worked for?
Well, let me tell you a bit of a story. So this is not going to be a fast answer. But so when I started at D-Wave, I got the note that said, Jen, meet the scientists. Now, I'm going to be really clear. My background is not, I do not have a PhD in physics, nor a PhD in anything engineering or mathematical. So I was a little intimidated by that. I thought, okay, I'm walking into a group of people that are no question smarter than I am and no question know their space better than I know. And how am I going to help them? So I sit down at this big table of all these scientists and they go around the room and they talk about, you know, who they are and what their experience is in. And I'm like, how do I even introduce myself? Like, how do you compete with the graphical topological theorist? You don't, it turns out. And so I sort of, you know, did my marketing, you know, hi, I'm Jen spiel. And they all sort of leaned in and said, what is one? They said, we've got one question for you. I'm like, okay, great. One question. Here we go. They're going to make me whiteboard algorithms and I'm going to be fired on day one. You know, that's just not going to work. And they said, you know, what do you do when someone says something about you in a blog that's bad? And the whole table, like, leaned back, like they had thrown the hardest question in the world to me. And I'm thinking, I'm surrounded by people who have built a quantum computer, and they're asking me, how do you engage with people who say negative things about you with a blog? But in that moment, what was so exciting about it is I recognized that with this incredible collection of polymaths and Renaissance thinkers, everyone has a role. each one of us have something that we uniquely bring to quantum computing. And I think that's going to be part of the topic that we talk about today, which is really, how do we bring to market this incredibly powerful set of technologies in a way that are consumable by people who don't speak physics? And I think that's where I uniquely have sort of this perspective and this role to play.
Oh, absolutely agree. My favorite part about what I get to do is taking these really complex topics, graphical topological theory, and trying to distill it down so that everyone can understand it.
That's right. And it's super fulfilling because you're never the smartest person in the room. You're always asking a set of questions that you know probably don't always come at, you're even asking them in the right way sometimes, because there's such a delta between your knowledge and what's sitting across the table from you. But when you start unlocking those and they get simpler and simpler, and you realize that you've got a sentence now that you could describe to perhaps one of your family members, that's like the moment of excitement for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so true that, like, you can have the greatest technology in the world, but if you can't explain why other people should use it, then right. No one will know about it.
That's right. And I think a lost art sometimes in deep tech is this concept of storytelling and the role of storytelling as something that unlocks that experience for the person sitting across from you. And so we spend a lot of time at D-Wave talking about, and with our customers, talking about what are their stories? How does this very deep tech unlock things that have been unlockable in the past? And so that's where the richness comes in. That's what gets super exciting. That's why, you know, I tell people I have the best job in the world, and it truly is. And it's because you get to bring this sort of fascinating set of technologies together with these fascinating set of business problems. And we're just really beginning to learn how they intersect. And that's just amazing and fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the subject of stories, do you have a favorite customer story that you'd like to or be willing to share here?
Oh, a favorite customer story. I do have one. So when I started at D-Wave, it was about 4 years ago. And so we have a conference called the Qubit Conference, and I'd love for your listeners to join. And it's really a customer conference. It's not a marketing conference, it's a customer conference. And so it's always been put on as such. And so I went to the first Qubits conference, and I was pulled aside by someone who worked at with NASA. And they said, you know, what has been the most impactful for D-Wave? I'd been there 3 or 4 months, right? So I'm still trying to figure all this stuff out. You know what the most impactful thing for D-Wave has been, right? And I'm thinking, okay, this is a trick because I've been here 3 months. I don't even know about the depth about qubits yet. And you're asking me what's most impactful. But I paused for a second and I said, one of the first things that I did when I got to D-Wave was I helped write the press release that told the story about what we were doing, the work that we had done, demonstrating with spin glass the coherent annealing in Science and Nature. And what we had done is unlocked a theory that had been the Kosterlitz-Thulitz theory. That had been proven that these were Nobel Prize winners. They had proven the math, but we were able to demonstrate it happening within quantum. And I said, the Science and Nature papers? Let's guess. And the customer said, yes, because what you have shown is there is the quantum mechanical effects and the value, the practical value that we can begin to see with these systems. And I took that forward I for many reasons. One, because, again, that's a great example of storytelling. Beautifully laying out what are the impact on material sciences with these kinds of things, and how by showing the insides of these systems, you can actually predict. And those are things that were bleeding edge right at that moment. That was 4 years ago. And you think about all the things that we've collectively as an industry published since then, and there's so much learning. And so I think that sense of curiosity, desire to learn, being frankly put outside of your comfort zone. I mean, I was completely unqualified to write that press release. Team probably got so sick of me asking the same question again and again. But in doing that, I learned and I was able to impart something that was super important to you know, the science of the industry. And the other part of the customer piece is I think it also shows you how dedicated our customers are collectively to this space, that that they are as passionate and as invested in quantum as we, the providers, are.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And as passionate, as invested as people are, we'd love for them to be more passionate and more invested. So how do we do that in, like, let's say, a responsible way without hyping it or overhyping it? Yeah. And I think maybe what could be good is we'll come up with like a list of principles here. So I'll bring up the first one, and I would say never overstate the implications or importance. And maybe you can come up with or elaborate on that or come up with your own.
Yeah. Mine's pretty simple. Tell the truth. I think I sit in a world, generically, marketing is a place where many people embellish. In this space, it is about data, it is about information, it is about experiences of customers. If we don't lead with that, the topic's way too complex and no one will trust us. And so, you know, principle one is tell the truth. Principle two is establish trust. Every communication that we have with anyone needs to be a moment of trust building and a moment of honesty. And when we, and a moment of assessing where we are today in the technology, where we will go tomorrow, but being super transparent about that.
Yeah, definitely agreed. And like what you said with everything in this space is built on data, and like you should be backing up your claims with science and evidence of traction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it gets super interesting when you have customers who start using the systems, as is in D-Wave's case. And I know with Zapata, with Orchestra, you use that, you bring that back into your storytelling, right? So much of what we learn every single day is that time that we spend with our customers and our clients. They say, gosh, you know what? It did this, but it couldn't do this. Or, wow, I would love it if it was easier to do this. And so we're constantly thinking about how do you bring that back into the product in a way that is incredibly powerful, that puts the onus not on the person who's using the system, but on the system itself. So I'm constantly saying to the team, how do we get that into the product? How do we make it easier for people to learn how to use this? How do we make sure that, you know, Python is as simple as possible, that Python interface is as simple as possible? And I think, you know, it's super important for us to, that's our job as the, you know, as being on the supply side of this. And that's, I think it's a responsibility, and it goes hand in hand with trust, because every time you're bringing a customer piece of feedback back, that's not something that's made up or pretend. That's a real use case or feature request or example.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And like what you were talking about with, you know, bringing this to business audiences, we should translate for business audiences. But I'm curious, you also talked about, you know, telling the more technical teams, like, we need, the business is saying this. Do you have to translate both ways?
I do. And I find myself, depending on the customer audience, some people are super, super technical. I'm really good at sort of bringing the right audiences in at the right time. I mean, first rule of marketing is know your audience, right? But that's first rule of human beings. Like, we should know who we're talking to. So that translation goes, you know, I will bring in as far as I can, and then it starts turning into a technical conversation, but it's the same thing the way back. And so, yeah, we're, it's sort of one of the more intellectually stimulating parts of the job, is that you do have to do multiple translations. And then even after that's done, that's still messy. So then you have to translate it up another level, which is how do you go to market with this in a way that's consumable more broadly?
Yeah. Very interesting. And changing topics a little bit here, you're someone you've been deeply involved with different industries. Your background is incredible, and I'll have a link to your bio on the D-Wave page. But yeah, you have extensive experience dealing with these customer stories, these enterprise customers. So what similar and dissimilar patterns do you see with quantum's ascent versus these other industries?
Well, I think the first and foremost is we are, you always want to orient yourself on where we are in the market, right? We are at an early adopter. Right now, these are early adopters who are engaging with quantum. People do not yet wake up in the morning and say, today's the day that I'm going to purchase a quantum computer, or go get it through the cloud, which, by the way, is much easier. So we have to make sure that we understand who we're talking to right now. And so the early adopters have a very clear set of psychographics and needs. And this is true. This is one of the universal statements. In an enterprise, if you are an early adopter, you are more likely to take greater risks. You have used technology and the decisions that you've made in your career to further your career. It's been a stepping stone. Those decisions have been a stepping stone. You, chances are, have a broad-based understanding of tech, and you have a curiosity about what is emerging. And so there's sort of some things that are just universal truths with an early adopter in technology in the enterprise. So that, I think, it serves us well, because we can pause and say, who are those people who sort of have those psychographic, things? And that isn't necessarily, notice I'm not saying personas or titles. I'm talking about sort of the behavioral pieces of how people consume, buy, make good decisions.
Yeah.
I think so. There, that is universal. Whether we're talking about quantum computing or we're talking about, I was in global comms for a really long time, and it could, one moment it could be developer tools, the next moment it could be, a major release of a OS. You know, there's just lots of different things. For a long time, I was involved in helping talk about open source and how. So I've done a lot of different things. So I would say that is universal. I think the things that are different is that you have so many different, now to sort of talk about the personas, the quantum is such a multi-directional and multi-layered set of technologies that you have lots of different people who are all sort of biting the elephant, right? Even within the same organization, you may have the VP of research who's asking a set of questions that are completely different than the person who's in the business unit thinking about a supply chain issue. And so really trying to bridge, find common ground, and still understand that when you're having that conversation with the VP of research, you need to make sure that you have your deep technical team there, because they care about, they want to go deep. They want to talk about what happens at the qubit level and how do you, how annealing works, or how gate model systems, how do you Hadamard gates, et cetera. How do you code those? Though I'm increasingly seeing that while research cares deeply about quantum, increasingly we're talking to that other person, that business unit lead who's at a pharma company who is thinking about supply chain, because, by the way, drug distribution is a key part of that business model, right? That person needs a totally different set of evidence, value proposition, and so navigating the requirements of the different people who are consuming quantum or considering consuming quantum is a really, it's a pretty significant difference than other, enterprise buying signals that I've seen in the past.
Very interesting. I wanted to go back to what you were talking about with it's only early adopters currently looking into quantum computing. Here's maybe a tougher question. Should everyone be an early adopter?
Well, there is no such thing. We wouldn't have early adopters if everyone was one, right? So, people buy and believe in different ways. I always talk about, I've always been in the innovation space. And so one of the things I learned early on in my career was, if it's a blue M&M, which, by the way, I've never tried to market, or a blue piece of candy, you discover it exists. Oh, they're blue now. And then you go and purchase it, because you go from discovery to I buy, I will believe, like this.
Okay.
If you're in an innovation space, there's extra steps along the journey. So the first is, I know it's out there. Okay, I know that quantum computers exist. But then the next thing is, well, I need to learn more. Oh, there are multiple types of quantum computers. There are different things that these quantum computers can do. They're on different timelines for when they can actually begin to do things. Then you need to move people into the I believe, I you've given me a value proposition. And once you get people there and they start saying, I understand what the value to me is and to my organization, then you move them to I believe, I will buy, I will get started. I think because we have those two other steps, the you know, learn and inspire steps,
yeah,
before we get to that I believe step, I'm not sure that everyone could be early adopters because they may not have the proclivity to be along that journey yet, right? But we know back to those early adopters, we know, and that is not a small universe of very smart people. You know, that is, my experience is, you know, just the other day, we were looking back in 2021, and between 2020 and 2021, we doubled the number of Global 2000 brands that we have, that we work with at D-Wave. Wow. So we have 25 of them now. So that's, we're not saying, you know, so out of the Global 2000, we're not, you know, that number is growing. So early adopters is not a limiting. I think it's more of a relating, understanding who's going to have those proclivities, those curiosities, et cetera. Now, fast forward 3 years, 4 years, we really, if we collectively haven't done our jobs and we haven't demonstrated the power and we haven't continued to put out incredible products that people can consume, you know, assuming that we do all those things, we now move ourselves into the more the mainstream and ultimately cross that chasm, quoting from Jeffrey Moore, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask if you were talking about early adopters in the crossing the chasm sense, but
yes.
It sounds like yes.
Absolutely. That was another formative early impact on my thinking.
Yeah, definitely. So you've already mentioned one way that the enterprise market is changing, where you're seeing more and more of the business leads coming to you and maybe less of, like, proportionally less of the VPs of research. Are there any other ways that you see the enterprise market changing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the velocity of applications is accelerating. Hmm. And not just accelerating, not just the volume of people who are beginning to build real applications, but they're really accelerating towards moving into adoption. So this is the beginning of something that we're going to see accelerate and accelerate and accelerate. You know, just with, you know, D-Wave clients alone, but I know that there's lots of people out there that are, you know, not only discovering what's possible in the applications, but doing POCs, piloting these in, you know, these incredible hybrid quantum applications in production, you know, piloting them and then ultimately moving them into production. We're just on the cusp of people moving to production. But I would say that even 2 years ago, these were more of toy problems. They were, you know, small things where you could play around with some qubits and you sort of got a sense of, oh, okay, what I could do. Now with hybrid approaches, and which is why I mentioned hybrid earlier, you know, when you add the power of classical and you add the power of quantum, you expand. I mean, our systems can handle up to 1 million variables. Those are real business size problems. Once you unlock that, that was sort of this magical moment where it's like, oh, I can do something real with it. And anyone that I sit down with, when you start showing how they can unlock their real problems with those large variables, their eyes light up.
It's a recurring theme here on the podcast at this point, hybrid quantum classical computing. One of the reasons I'll keep pointing it out is because it offers up both opportunities and challenges. Jen's done a great job of illuminating the opportunities, and if you haven't already, make sure you read our blog post about the classical elephant in the quantum room to learn more about how Zapata is tackling the challenges.
And I, you know, it's seeing what's possible, it's believing, and then all of a sudden, the rest of it is more a conversation about where do you start and what problems are the right ones. So I think that's a core thing that has changed.
Yeah.
And is actively changing.
Right. Yeah. Continuing to accelerate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. We're you're talking about this acceleration and you're seeing a doubling in the number of these massive companies that you're working with.
That's the big ones. We of course have lots of other ones, but
yeah. Yeah. And so, I'd love to hear another story. We talk about storytelling. If you've got another one from one of these companies, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, let me talk about one. This is a large oil and gas company. And I had the luxury of them telling me their story. And I think I was really taken with this. So this was a is someone who's within this large oil and gas company. He has always sort of lived in their, you know, future, thinking ahead, looking at technology that's coming down the pike space. I think he's been at the company for like 25 years, a very long time. And he started doing research into quantum because he's like, well, you know, I probably should understand this. And to his credit, he did a lot of research. He did a lot of reading. He's, you know, he's a PhD, so he already had sort of a mathematical background. Read up about gate model systems, then sort of started finding out about simulated annealers and started testing and benchmarking what they could do against the things that he needed to achieve. And he sort of came out finding out about annealers much later, like it was longer in his process. And he started saying, well, gosh, there's these hybrid approaches. Let me try this. And so by sitting down and actually sort of going through a very deliberate process of learning, he came out the other side and said, I have a bunch of problems that are use cases that could very specifically. So whether it be looking at, you know, locations of new, you know, new fonts of oil and gas, or, you know, locations of where you put the pumps, or there, you know, there are optimization problems that live everywhere, right? And so pulling that through, he all of a sudden had this sense like, I can do real things today. He's now taken that within his organization and has gotten two or three other parts of the company to say, wait, we didn't know you could do this. Now that we see you can do this, what we've got three ideas too. And I think that these people, these are quantum pioneers within these organizations. They are absolutely unlocking the power of their businesses.
As impressive as this case is, you should know that you don't have to do all of that research yourself. Working with a trusted partner to identify those first potential applications is one of the key ingredients in a successful deployment of quantum, something that Dana Jones talked about in our previous episode.
And so there's this network effect of learning, trying, finding out, putting the right application, and not getting stuck on the technology. I think that's another lesson from this person is he had a sense of the use cases that would be important to his company. He didn't just go into explore quantum for quantum's sake, right? He said, here are the five or six things that if we could even solve 1%, you know, if I could be 1% better, that's millions and millions and millions of dollars. By taking that sort of approach, and then learning how to think quantumly, he began to become this, it's like throwing a rock in a pond, right? He started this movement within his organization. And I think that's a great example of someone who probably fits that early adopter persona that we were talking about. And, you know, now they're all excited about, you know, what's next within their application base. So it's a great story of someone's journey.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that's a success story. Next question is, when it comes to deploying and scaling and adopting even new technologies, what pitfalls should enterprises be looking out for?
Well, I think in quantum specifically, but I think this is often true for most new technologies, they can be bright, shiny objects, and we can chase the technology, not the business problem we're solving for. And so we regularly sit down with customers and talk to them about their business problems. What are the unique places where, so as an example, we did a survey with 451 Research about 2 years ago, just to sort of see where the market was. And one of the most scary and powerful pieces of data that came out of that was of the people they surveyed, I think they surveyed a couple hundred people, you know, North America, Europe, of the people they surveyed, big companies, 31% had walked away from a project that they had funded because it was too complex. Wow. So they had spent some amount of money, from a dollar to millions of dollars, and walked away because the project was too complex. This is the moment. This is where quantum plays a role. But if you approach it through the lens of, I need quantum for quantum's sake, you're going to fail. If you approach it through the lens of, where are those problems that we've stepped away from? That's when it gets exciting. So I think that's a real pitfall, is technology for technology's sake.
Yeah, definitely. Next, maybe more challenge-oriented question. What have been some of the challenges of marketing such an early-stage technology?
Well, I mentioned earlier that no one yet wakes up every morning saying, today's the day that I want to buy a quantum computer or purchase time on a quantum computer. So I think the biggest challenge is finding those early adopters, finding those people who are the next generation within their organizations. They may be a senior person, but they're at the edge of bringing their organization to the next level, and making sure that the conversation, back to that sort of earlier point about there's so many different potential people in the conversation, making sure you're having the right conversation with them. I'll share another story. So I was on a call when I started, maybe 6 months into my job. And it was one of those stories where you saw the train wreck happening in front of you and you couldn't stop it. And you're like, no, it's like slow motion kind of thing. So it was with a major insurance company, and this is, again, a long time ago, and the person that was presenting to the insurance company was talking about quantum physics at the most technical detail you can imagine. So about 20 minutes in, and I'm listening, I'm thinking, if these are people who are head of innovation at this insurance company, and we're talking to them about Hadamard Gates and, you know, annealing way at the low, annealing quantum computers. And so the guy stops this presenter at about 20 minutes in and says, okay, thanks, but we're an insurance company. What do we do with quantum computing? We don't understand. Like, tell me what that. And the person who was presenting, again, no longer, long time ago, not part of the company anymore, said, okay, no problem. And then literally went to the next slide, which happened to be yet another, you know, how we keep these things at 15 millikelvin slide, and then just kept going. And I'm like, you know, you're literally, it's like you wish you could throw yourself in front of the train. I think that is perhaps a trap that we as an industry still fall into. And it's our responsibility to have a business value conversation with that person sitting across from us, right? It is, here are your business problems these are the business problems I think that you're facing, insurer. How can we help identify those and then bring quantum as appropriate? Because not all problems are right for quantum, for the record. I hate to burst anyone's bubble, but... what are the most complex? What are the ones that take you too long? What are the problems that cost too much?
Yeah.
That's the conversation that we need to have.
Yeah. Well, and I would say maybe this goes back to your earlier point of those extra steps, right? Like, there is a time and a place to talk to someone about the technology and what's the difference between annealing and gate-based. But like, maybe not when you're talking to the higher-ups who don't really care about all of that.
Nor should they.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember having someone at Gartner tell me that they were doing sort of a poll. They'd done an overview of quantum computing, and they did a poll. They said, how many people in here care about which technologies on the back end? And like
the crickets,
like an eighth of the people raised their hand. How many of you just want your problems to be solved? Everyone's hands go up, right? You know, yes, that's all we need. And that's our job. Like that's our job as the community that's building these things, is let's help people's lives be better, not because we've created new drugs, which, by the way, we will all do with these systems someday, but let's, back to telling the truth, but let's make their jobs, let's get them their next promotion. Let's help them lead the transformation of their business so they either continue the successes they've had or disrupt an entire industry because they use quantum as a new way to solve problems, right? That's our job.
Definitely. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about Zapata because this is the Zapata Quantum
Pod.
Yeah,
it's fine.
We've integrated your quantum hardware and software libraries into Orchestra, which is super cool. What types of problems should our customers be looking at that are maybe best suited?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no question that the optimization space for annealing quantum computers, that is just the perfect, it's hand in glove, right? And so your customers, when they're thinking about, let's say you're in financial services, when you're thinking about hedge funds and reducing risk in hedge funds. That is an optimization problem. In fact, Caixa Bank just, you know, saw almost 90%, you know, up to 90% decrease in cost for keeping the same amount of risk. It's a great example. Or you're in financial services and you're looking at the obvious one, portfolio optimization. How do I optimize my portfolios? Another is, ironically, protein folding. Turns out protein folding has a significant optimization problem that underpins the work. That's a great one. If you're in patient trials, every pharma company has a set of patient trials. Optimizing those trials, minimizing drug toxicity by understanding the patterns of those trials. We recently were on stage at Q2B with PayPal, and they were talking about how they were using feature selection. So an ML, you know, a feature select, and I know you do a lot of ML with your customers.
It's true. We have an incredible quantum AI team here at Zapata. If you'd like to learn about more quantum machine learning considerations from one of our very own QML software rock stars, Brian Delabetta has a recent blog post that I've linked in the show notes, and he was also a guest on a previous episode of The Quantum Pod.
An ML feature selection to look at fraud detection. You know, there's so many. So that universe of optimization is really the sweet spot. The other thing that we've recently learned, so I would say there's just some bright, shiny objects, but if you're thinking about, of course, supply chain or, you know, of bin packing, 3D bin packing, I mean, there are problems that we're facing all the time that are just really hard with classical resources. And I think your customers absolutely could benefit from sort of exploring those problems where they run into that 31% that I was talking about earlier. The other thing I'd say is, and something that's relatively new, is over the last year or so, there's been a lot of research about, you know, optimization and what the right systems are for it. And what they're finding, there's a number of papers out there that are saying that because of the overhead to pre-process optimization problems on a gate model system is NP-hard into itself. So you have to have a quantum computer to use the quantum computer, which is not the way, it's not going to work. And so really understanding which problems today are ready for optimization, ready today for quantum computing, really in optimization in the annealing quantum space. And then longer term, how do you get ready for things like quantum chemistry or material sciences that are going to be, you know, 5, 7, 10, 12, 15, depending on sort of where we are at those systems. And I think, you know, it's sort of navigating what problems you have today that are going to benefit from quantum and what problems longer term are going to benefit from other systems. And then knowing that you don't have to choose, you know, you can use both to get to the answers as, you know, the right ones, the right tool at the right time.
Yeah, definitely. So it's going to be an exciting year for D-Wave, like you're talking about, with multiple quantum architectures. You're starting to get into gate-based as well as annealing. Any predictions or maybe sneak peeks you want to give us?
Well, we did it last fall at our Qubits conference. We announced our Clarity roadmap, and that was essentially saying, listen, our customers really just need the right systems that underpin those use cases that they're trying to engage in. So as an example, if you're a pharma company and today you're looking at patient trial optimization using an annealing quantum computer, if you had cross-platform tools and we work with partners like you all, and you know, you have this sort of tool set that you can use, then when we are ready with these gate systems that are quantum chemistry, and then you start doing drug discovery, you can just use the same approach, right? And then just use these cross-platform tools and go in and see the benefits. And I think that's a core trend and a core part of what we're really working on. And so our GATE program has been going on for a bit. We're making great progress there. We're working actively on Advantage 2, which we talked about, the next version with the higher connectivity, all those things. So we're like, we're pretty hardcore about product development and delivery. Back to the tell the truth. I mean, the first time we announced sort of a roadmap a couple of years ago, the technology team was like, oh my God, the pressure you're putting on us. And I was like, you all are great at this. You're going to do it. And we met every single milestone. And I think that's really what you should expect from D-Wave. Those things that we talked about in the Clarity roadmap, we're working on them and they are on track. And, you know, it's a pretty exciting time. And I think for the industry, it's an exciting time.
Definitely. Well, this has been incredible. I've learned a lot from you. Thank you so much for coming into the Quantum Pod.
Ethan, it has been my pleasure. I loved your questions. Super fun. And now everyone's going to want to see my little mouse. So I may need to take a picture of Delia and share it on social. Maybe when we post the podcast, we'll make sure she gets a guest appearance. So thank you so much. Nice to chat with you.
I hope you enjoyed learning from Jen's experiences in this episode as much as I did while making the episode. One major piece of advice I'll be sure to carry forward is that with quantum, there are often extra steps that need to be taken to convince people of the benefit, but not everyone needs to get a crash course in universal quantum gates to learn what they need to about quantum computing. Be sure to like the podcast wherever you listen to it, subscribe, and maybe even leave a review if you're feeling generous. Until next time, this is Ethan Hansen reminding you that to truly understand the superposition, you must first become the superposition.